Hi everyone, welcome on to The Sweet Spot. It's the Racing Post's weekly golf show with Bruce Millington. And this week, stepping in for Steve Palmer, it's another member of the super shrewd Racing Post golf squad. It's James Mason. Loads and loads happening, four events to look back on and four more to preview. The big names from the PGA Tour are having a week off because we've got loads coming up, including obviously the Open, which looms later this month. There's loads of competitive fare. We've got the Live London back where it all started. All the stars from Live are out in force there. The DP World Tour, rather, moves up to Denmark for the Made in Himmerland. We've got the John Deere Classic in America and also the US Women's Open. Before we get stuck in to see who James has picked out this week, we'll look back on last week. And James will start at the Belfry where the British Masters, well, if it was an Agatha Christie novel, the person who ended up doing it probably didn't appear and get their first mention until about three pages from the end, because Daniel Hillier, little-known New Zealander, progressive, 80-1, he finished eagle birdie, eagle par to win by two shots, came from absolutely nowhere, would have been a huge price in running. So it was a dramatic old tournament. What do you think of Daniel Hillier, James Mason? Is this the first step on a golden career, or will we be looking back down the roll of honour in 20 years' time and going, who the hell was he?
I mean, I think he's certainly got some scope. He's only 24 years of age, so there's still, you'd feel, a lot of improvement that he can make. He'd already won two times on the Challenge Tour as well before making this breakthrough. It was a bit out of the blue, wasn't it? Because, like you said, you only saw him towards the end of the coverage. Some of the coverage can sometimes, it frustrates me a little bit, because somebody may have gone for Hillier and thinking, trying to, you know, follow him around the round and thinking, where is he? But the Belfry, to be fair, the Brabazon is made for that kind of strong finish, isn't it? You saw it with Torbjørn Olesen last year when he made, it was eagle birdie finish. And, you know, Hillier's done it even better there. So fair credit to him. He's gone past quite a few players. I think some of those that are ahead of him, I think they got stuck playing themselves. They were watching the leaderboard too much, where Hillier wasn't. He was three shots off the lead going into the last round. I think he was playing with more freedom, more ease, because he wasn't really expecting much. And then the putt he made on the last hole as well to make par, a horrible little left to right snaker down the hill of about 5-6 foot, and he put it right in the center. So fair credit to him. I think he'll probably win again. I don't think it'll be an absolutely amazing stellar career, but I think he will definitely win again on the DP World Tour.
Well, winning again after a long break and warming the hearts of all American and indeed global golf fans was Ricky Fowler. Steve had been tipping him resolutely. He was sure he was going to win. He just lost the faith in the last couple of weeks. But Ricky kept it going, won the Rocket Mortgage Classic in dramatic style. Really, really fascinating tournament that, and held his nerve brilliant. And he's hugely popular, isn't he, James? And, you know, there was a real sort of outpouring of love for Ricky Fowler. It was nice to see.
There was. I mean, I was expecting more of a emotion from him when he held that putt on the first playoff hole, but it was kind of sort of, I knew this was coming. I knew this was coming along, and there wasn't that big outpouring of emotion. But yeah, fair credit. Over 4 years for this title, 10th PGA Tour title now. And not only does it get him back in terms of when you're thinking of, you know, back at the world rankings, but major contention as well with the Open coming up. You're thinking Ryder Cup also. He's going up the standings. He probably won't get one of the top six spots, but in terms of into the captain's picks, you know, Zach Johnson, he'll be thinking about Fowler now. So I think, you know, he's in a really, really good position going into these last few months of the PGA Tour season. In terms of other players, I think in the tournament, sort of other things taken away from it, Tony Finau and Justin Thomas for me are going the other way.
Oh,
and both of them are actually...
Thomas is at war with himself, isn't he? Is it just the putting?
No, I think it's all facets of his game at the moment, because last week, the week before the Rocket Mortgage, you thought he's got a top 10 at the Travelers. He got tied ninth, you think, right, now he can probably kick on. And again, it was just, I mean, he was making his debut at the Rocket Mortgage, so that's something you can maybe attribute to it. But for a course that is set up for birdies and the low scoring there was, it was, you know, dreadfully poor from him. And Finau as well. He, the defending champion, missed the cut. Both of those two in a sort of what I'm thinking is they're falling away from the Ryder Cup talk, especially Finau. He's down to somewhere like, is it 16th to 18th, somewhere around that on the Ryder Cup standings? Since he won the Mexico Open, he's just nosedived.
Interesting, yeah. Okay, and then we'll leave the live roundup because I'm sure that will form part of your preview. But it was interesting, I thought, that Valderrama, which is this tight, very precise course, the Bombers were performing well there. So we'll discuss live in a minute. And then the US Senior Open, I mean, he's a senior, Bernhard Langer, but he's still got that grit and that determination and that will to win, hasn't he? He's one of these guys who never seems to get old, and he held off Stricker et al. Very impressively. It was a classic Bernhard Langer destruction, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised to see Langer still churning out victories on the Tour Champions, because he still turns up to the Masters and he still battles away and you know, more often than not, makes the cut. I mean, he's just
got that fail-safe swing, James, hasn't he? It's just like a hinge, isn't it? It opens, it closes. It's just nothing can go wrong with it, can it?
It's just repetition from it, isn't it? It never changes. It's just that you said, it's just that swing back and forth. What's that, 46 titles he's got on the PGA Tour Champions now? He's broke the record, which Hale Irwin had. He's got his 12th senior major, again, extending his own record tally, and that. He's just absolutely superb. And it's a really good example, I think, of a golfer who's maybe going into their later years to say, you know what, get on the Tour Champions and see if you can do it on there as well.
Okay, that was the review of last week. Let's look ahead now. We've got four tournaments this week, and we're going to start with LIV, because it's back where it all began, in London at Centurion Club. LIV Golf London starts on Friday, 48 runners. As always, same old format, shotgun start, three rounds. Indicative prices, Brooks Koepka 15. No, I'm going to go 8-1 and read from the court of the five list. 8-1 Brooks Koepka, 10-1 Cam Smith, Dustin Johnson and Bryson DeChambeau, 11 Taylor Gooch, 16 Patrick Reed, 20 Barr. James, this Taylor Gooch, he's not going to be having to borrow a tenner off anyone anytime soon. That's his third win on LIV this year at Valderrama last week. I had a little look at the Masters, and the British Open. He's 80-1. I mean, he's really good, isn't he?
He is. I was surprised when he went to LIV, purely for the fact that he just seemed like he was making his way on the PGA Tour, and he was getting into the spotlight a bit more. You know, he's an incredibly good iron player. That's something, a facet of his game that's really, really good. Then he made the decision to go to LIV, and, you know, it's financially beneficial for him. I think I read it's $13.3 million he's made this year alone in LIV events. Played 8 events and he's got $13.3 million. It's not bad, but 3 victories. But yeah, he's just got the confidence at the moment. And I suppose when the fields are that short as well, he's always got a really, really good chance now going into it, because, you know, you look at some of them in this field and you've still got the no marks, really. Or not no marks, but the people that are past it that are not, you know, producing any sort of form. So really, when you look at the market of the LIV events, you're probably only looking at the first 15 in the betting, maybe. I don't think you're probably going any lower down than that.
No, just because the others aren't showing form. Shocks we've had, isn't it? Anyway, we've gone out of format, haven't we? We need to find out what the venue holds, and then we'll get your tips. So tell us all about Centurion.
Yeah, I mentioned Centurion. Obviously, you said it's the first ever LIV event was here. Not a lot of sort of course form to go off. It's not held many tournaments. It had the Golf Sixes in 2017 and 2018. That was on the European Tour, DP World Tour, as it's known now. It's part of the Aramco series as well for the LPGA Tour. So, yeah, like I said, not a lot of form really to go on, but it's a course that demands a very, very good driver. Dustin Johnson, Sergio Garcia, Charles Schwartzel, they've all said that it's a very tough track in terms of you've got to hit a lot of different clubs off the tee box as well. So it's about course management for a lot of it. 80 bunkers. You've got 4 major water features to negotiate around the course as well. So, you know, it's a tough one. Fairways are quite narrow as well. That's what they said. You've got to be hitting the driver or a long iron well off the tee box. So you've got to stay focused around the testing course. Mentioned Schwartzel. He won it by just one stroke last year. 7 under par was the winning mark as well. So it shows you that a quality ball striker is a must here. Just over 7,000 yards. So it's not the longest, but like I said, it's difficult to negotiate with a lot of the sloping fairways and undulating greens as well.
And it's been pretty damn windy as well. If that keeps up, that couldn't make it difficult. Right then, James, how many selections do you have for LIV Golf London?
I've just got the one selection for LIV this week.
Fire away.
So I'm going for Mito Pereira, who you can get around 20 to 1. I mentioned I'm not really looking further down than the sort of top 15 in the market, but Pereira is usually such a steady player off the tee, solid fairway finder. Before he made the switch to live as well, he ranked in the top 10 for strokes gained approach the green. So, you know, that aspect of his game is good. His form on live this season's been very, very strong as well. You look at his results that he's had. So he's been tied 15th, tied 6th, tied 5th, tied 26th, 5th, tied 30th and 3rd. So, you know, he's had some really good results in there without being able to get over the mark. Most recently, he was tied 14th at Valderrama. Again, I think that bodes well for going into this type of course. He's not far away from everything coming together. And I just think he's got a great chance to challenge this week. And definitely at odds of 20 to 1, I'm not saying he's been overlooked in the market because there's bigger hitters than him up there, but I think that's a good price for him.
Okay. Oh, by the way, I need to establish my nodding frequency. Steve revealed on a recent show that I don't nod enough. He likes it when I nod while he's giving his cases. Do you have a preference or are you so focused you don't care?
No, you nod away if you want to nod away. That's fine.
Okay, I'll set myself in gentle nod mode. And if you say something really shrewd, you'll see me nodding away. One person I did want to talk about, James, was Bryson DeChambeau, because we talked, I mentioned earlier about how, you know, Valderrama, the home of the precise golfer, was overpowered last week with Brooks finishing second. I mean, that's some performance, that, isn't it? And there are signs that, not sorry, Bryson finished, there are signs that he's back. I wonder if he could be a factor at the Open.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, DeChambeau, I think, recently made, in an interview, was saying he's lost a lot of bulk around the neck. Because I remember when he first went on that bulking up process and he just looked huge and there was no neck and you thought, what on earth is going on? He's gone for power and that's it. Whereas now with the injuries that he's had and how fast his swing was, I think he's realised he's got to change his physique a little bit. And I think he's probably more of a, you know, all round in better physical shape. And it's for me, it's always the short game a little bit, DeChambeau. If he can get that up to the level you probably require for an Open Championship, you know, with all the big undulating greens, whether he can read them well enough is another question to ask. But definitely, he's got the long game back because that went a little bit skewy. It's just a short game for me. If he gets that right, he could challenge at the Open.
Interesting. Okay, from London or the outskirts of London to Northern Denmark for the Made in Himmerland Challenge, which is the DP World Tour event this week. Pretty starless, but wide open. These are indicative prices. As always, 16 to 1, Nikolai Højgaard, 18 to 1, Alexander Bork, and Torben Olesen. Very North European feel to the market. 20 to 1, Yannick Paul, 20, Jordan Smith, 22, Rasmus Højgaard, 22, Adrian Ottergay, 25, Robert McIntyre, the man who never has a week off, and it's 30 bar. Tell us all about this course, James. This is the one with that really, really sort of pitch and putt length par three. Have I got that right?
Yes, it was 2015 edition is when it played to 79 yards, I remember.
My sort of hole there.
It's perfect because for a lot of the players, you're thinking, what on earth am I going to hit here? It'd be an opened up flop shot wedge probably of some sort that they'd be using on it. Yeah, but brilliant little hole, and it's just a different type of thing that the players are having to think about. But yeah, Himmerland Golf and Spa Resort. So it's been played here, the Made in Himmerland, since its inception in 2014. Apart from 2018, where it had a little year away, it went to Silkeborg Rye Golf Club. It's also held the Nordic Open, this course. That was way back in 2003 when a fresh-faced Ian Poulter managed to get the victory then. But it's a par 70, 6,646 yards, so it's not the biggest of tracks. 12 par 4s, 2 par 5s and 4 par 3s. Last two winning scores, though, have been 21 under. So, you know, there's a lot of birdies to get there. It's a variety of winners, though. There's not just one sort of type of player that's suited to it. So you've had big hitters like Thomas Peters, Bernd Wiesberger, but then you've had Oliver Wilson, who won it last year, David Horsey in 2015. So for me, I'm sort of looking for a solid tee to green player. Give yourself plenty of looks at birdie, and you got to wield that putter with authority if you're going to win in Denmark. The only really wayward tee shots will get punished here. Somewhere around, if you're getting 50% driving accuracy by the end of the week, that's all you really need. On the last edition, which Wilson won, it was the top 10 players. No one was better than 51% driving accuracy. So it doesn't really need that. It's more about the approach play and getting the solid short game going.
Oh, I mean, that's interesting. How many tips have you got, James?
Going for 3 picks for this one.
Okay, fire away with your leading fancy.
Yeah, the headline of Adrian Ottergay, 28 to 1. Now, I mentioned obviously driving accuracy isn't needed that much, but it never hurts to hit the fairways, and he's unrivaled in driving accuracy on the DP World Tour. He's ranking first. He's also third in strokes gained tee to green, second in approach to green. He's got a ranking of eighth in strokes gained around. So pretty much tee to green, he's been very, very good. His greens and regulation percentage is in the top 30, so it's further boosting his claims for me. He was third here as well in the 2016 edition. He was 16th 3 years later, so he has a bit of form. Clearly has a bit of a liking for this sort of setup, and he also arrives off the back of a runners-up finish at the KLM Open. Now, that was a month ago, but the rumours are that he got banned for the month of June for his live appearances that he made, so he wasn't allowed to compete in the month of June is what I was hearing, but now he's back. He had to pay a fine as well. He'll be itching.
They kept that quiet, did they?
Yeah, well, I wonder, because I saw him at the KLM Open and thought, oh, you'll be someone to look at next week. And then he just wasn't in tournaments. And then a little bit of research, and that was the rumours that he was banned for the month of June, wasn't allowed to compete. So, you know, he'll be, you know, he'll have his back up a little bit. And I think he'll definitely be wanting to try and win. And for me, all of the areas of the game that I think you need to win here, he's been performing very, very well in them. So he looks a good price.
Nice one, Adrian Ottergay, the man with only 7 letters in his surname and 5 different vowels. Okay, right, who's the danger?
Danger, I'm actually going for the defending champion, Oliver Wilson, who at 50-1 looks a good price. He ended a near 8-year wait for his second European title at last year's event. He held off Scotland's Ewan Ferguson to win by a stroke. That was when he finished on 21 under. He struggled to kick on in 2023, I will say that, but he produced a really confidence-boosting tied second at the British Masters last time out last week. You know, negotiated the tricky Brabazon course really, really well. And then you look at some of the stats that he's got at the Belfry. This was our last week. He was second in green in regulations, and he was 9 in strokes gained tee to green. So it's pleasing to see for me those two assets of his game are back on song. Definitely, I think he'd be in with a chance of defending the title if he can replicate that kind of form. If he can take it from the Belfry over to Denmark, I think he's got a great chance.
He's a former Ryder Cupper, of course, isn't he? It's quite a good one, that, isn't it? Sort of little-known Ryder Cuppers. It'd be a good pointless question, wouldn't it, that?
Yeah, I like those kind of questions.
Ross, go on, you've got another one. Give me another one. Someone who'd say, blimey, he was in the Ryder Cup. Was Stephen Gallagher in the Ryder Cup?
Stephen Gallagher was at Glen Eagles, and he only played the singles, and he lost the singles match, I seem to remember. So it didn't go fully well for him. Ross Fisher's another one for me. Former match play. He was the match play champion when they played, and it was at Wales at Celtic Manor as when I think he was in the team there. So there's some great players when you look down the years, you think, no way did he play in it. But
yeah, I know. We'll have to dig a few more of those out. Right then, so we've got Ottergay, we've got Oliver Wilson, and the final selection.
Yannick Paul at 20-1. Really solid form this season.
He's in the Ryder Cup as things stand, isn't he? I think on the current rankings, he's in.
Yeah, he's in, or he's just on the periphery. You know, he's around there. So he's certainly, like I said, the form this season, 3 top 5, 5 top 10s, you know, ranks in the top 10 for strokes gained off the tee, approach, 14th in greens and regulation. So it's all making for sort of a good performances coming up. Now, he returned to action last week at the Belfry as well, finished tied 8. And that was a week where he didn't practice because he was still recovering from an injury that forced him to withdraw from the week before. So he withdrew on the eve of the tournament the week before, barely played, but said, yeah, I'll tee it up at the Belfry. And is obviously striking it well that you can go there without practicing in the lead up to your first round and still record a top 10. So he's certainly someone who just seems to be, you know, full of confidence with his game at the moment. Yeah, I think they made in Denmark. I think it's made for Paul, I think, to go and hit a low score.
And if he does do well this week and probably next week as well, he's pretty much, well, he's not quite in there because there's some big prices to come. But as things stand, there's every chance that Yannick Paul will join that list of, blimey, he was in the Ryder Cup players. Okay, we're all done there. Let's cross to America. We normally do the USPGA tournament first, but not that good this week. So we'll do it. It might be James's strongest fancy. We'll find out. It's the John Deere Classic. And as I say, all the stars are having a little break before the build-up to the Open. So hence, we've got Denny McCarthy at 14-1 favourite. Russell Henley is 16, Cameron Young's 18. Ludvig Åberg, Steve's big fancy last week, played so well for so long, but then just fell away. He's 25-1. Chris Kirk's 28. Adam Hadwin came very close to winning last week. He's 28. Keith Mitchell, 28. Taylor Moore, 28. Emiliano Grillo, 28. Adam Schenck is 30. And it's 33 bar. So not stellar names, but an interesting lineup. Something slightly different after all these elevated, whatever events, designated events. So slightly different look to the US Tour field this week, James, but no less interesting all the same. Tell us all about the venue and then we'll get your tips.
Yeah, TPC Dearon, Illinois, this one is. For the third straight week on the PGA Tour, I think it's going to be low scoring. Expect another birdie fest. You know, the last two tournaments have been low. This one will be 19 under or better has been the winning score in 12 of the last 13 editions of this tournament. So, you know, expect the players to hit some red numbers. But to par 71, 7,257 yards. You've got 10 par 4s, 4 par 5s and 4 par 3s. You know, again, like the Maiden Himalayan, there's been quite a mix of winners. You've had Steve Strick is a three-time winner here, but DeChambeau has also won it. Jordan Spieth is a two-time winner. So, you know, a variety of players can manage to get around this course. I would personally like a strong driver of the ball here. I think having that extra bit of power off the tee, but still maintaining the accuracy, you know, you don't want to be going too wild. I think that's probably where you want to go. I think, yeah, a big hitter can probably do well here. But for me, you want a bit of distance, but still having that accuracy, still finding the fairways of regularity.
Okay, how many tips, James?
Going for two tips for this one.
Two tips. Who's your main selection?
Going to go with Keith Mitchell at 28-1. Mentioned strong driver of the ball. Well, he should have a big advantage at TPC Dearon. You know, he stands out in this field. He's second in total driving this season on the PGA Tour. That's distance and accuracy combined. So exactly.
Who's number one on that?
Patrick Cantlay / Scotty Scheffler. Those two, okay. I think, are around the same. I think Keith Mitchell, when I looked at it, he was third. And then when you go on his profile, it says second. I think he's pretty much the same as Scheffler, I think, as Mitchell. So Cantlay's the number one up there. So it shows the kind of players ahead of him, only two or one to say. But, you know, they're both very, obviously, very strong players and the world's elite. So Mitchell, very good in that aspect of his game. He was tied 20th at the US Open on his latest outing. So he's had a little bit of a break, you know, but good confidence because we know how they set up the US Open tracks. They're always hard to do. Fifth in strokes gained off the tee. He was seventh here on his debut in 2018 as well. His only win at the moment on the PGA Tour was 2019. So a little bit of a wait, but I don't think a second win is too far away from him. He's very, very close to me, just for getting everything clicking together. And if he gets the putter going, if he gets that going, obviously with a strong driver, I think he's got a really, really good chance at decent odds as well.
Excellent. Keith Mitchell is James Mason's main selection for the John Deere Classic. And you've also going to back that up with one more. Who is?
Callum Tarran at 90-1. Bigger price here. A poor first quarter of the year. I mean, not sure how much you know of Tarran, but last season on the PGA Tour, he's Darlington, yeah. He's up that way. So he used to work at Close House. Lee Westwood's course up in Northumberland, because I was on a stag do a few weeks ago, and one of the guys that was on it used to work with Callum Tarran at Close House.
Stag
do was in Leeds, so it was right on my doorstep, so it was quite good. But he told me a story of Tarran where they were working in the bar serving tea, sandwiches, coffees, and I think Tarran said, I'm not staying here for the rest of my life. And that was pretty much it. He said, I'm not staying here for the rest of my life.
When they're selling you your Mars bar and pointing where the foot is, they all want to be a contender. But this is a great story, Callum Tarran, because he's gone out there and done it.
Yeah,
and now
he's
been picked on the sweet spot to win a US PGA Tour event. Why?
Well, fingers crossed, why? Yeah, well, he's been picking up over recent weeks. Like I said, the first quarter of the year, it wasn't great. I think he just struggled to maintain the form because he showed really good form last year on the PGA Tour. Struggled to keep it going. But he arrives now off the back of a tied 29 finish at the Rocket Mortgage Classic last week. You know, he is one of the bigger hitters on the PGA Tour. He can wield that driver with authority. It's every chance he can contend, I think, and improve on a sixth place finish on here on debut last year as well. So he has fond memories of coming to this one. Second stab at it. He can be quite a streaky player, I think, when it comes to the greens, but, you know, there's the hope for me that he gets on a bit of a roll with the putter, like he did over the first two rounds last week. You know, he was right up there, but then he just didn't convert his chances over the weekend. So if the putter's hot, I think Tarran, with the power that he's got, could really do well on this course.
Brilliant. I did want to ask you about Cameron Young, James, because when he inherited Webb Simpson's caddy. Everyone was predicting great things, weren't they, and saying that this is going to be it. This is his breakthrough time. And it hasn't worked out that way, and he's not even favourite for a fairly substandard fielder. What's happened to Cameron Young?
Yeah, it is disappointing, isn't it? Because you looked at the results he had last year and you think it's one of those where everyone goes, it's only a matter of time before he wins, or it's only a matter of time before he wins a major. Whether it's that weight of expectation that's been put on him, whether as well, because there was a lot of talk that Liv tried to get him, whether he was sort of torn between whether he goes there, whether he tries to keep, you know, building his career on the PGA Tour. I think he's just had, a tough few months, really. I think now everything's settled down as well, with obviously the merger that we've heard a few weeks ago. I think Young will start to progress, but I just don't fancy him. I don't think there's enough form about him going into this tournament, even though it's one that he should probably rip up when you look at the players around him and you look at his game as well. It should really suit this track. But
I wondered if he might be the sort of kick-yourself selection. If he wins, you'd be, oh, Christ, why didn't we take Cameron Young? But as you say, the form's not there, is it? You've got to bait. I mean, are you like Steve, very much a current form man versus sort of back class and course form?
Yes, I mean, I like a bit of course form, but, you know, someone winning a tournament that was 10 years ago at the place, I'm probably not looking at. Yeah, I am more of a, say, like the last sort of 2-3 months of form or something like that. I like them going in with a little bit of confidence, but it can be a minefield at times, can't it?
Because okay. I mean,
see recently, Keegan Bradley, wasn't it? He'd missed cuts before going in, hadn't won in nearly 4 years. Fowler was better, but Bradley was the one. But then Thurston Lawrence as well on the DP World Tour a couple of weeks ago, he'd missed cuts galore going into the tournament, and then he goes and wins it. So it's the quality.
I mean, I don't know how Steve does it week in, week out. I mean, it is a ridiculously frustrating hard game, isn't it? And sometimes you catch a lucky break, but there's a lot of frustration involved as well. And obviously that's why it's so important to just bet small. It's the sort of fun lottery area of betting, really, isn't it? And we've got one more tournament. It's the US Women's Open. James is going to tell us all about the venue and who he fancies. But first, here's the latest betting. Rose Zhang, 12-1. Jin Young Ko is 14. Atai Titikor is 16. And then it's 18, Leona Maguire and Hyu Ju Kim. Nelly Korda, 22, along with Hai Jin Choi and Zhu Lin, and it's 25 bar. Where is this one taking place, James?
Pebble Beach, so well known to everyone, so it'll be fantastic. But it's the first time that the US Women's Open has been held at Pebble Beach, so it's a historic moment. It's going to be held here, I think it's three or four times more after this one as well in the next 25 years. So it's really, really good to see that Pebble Beach has got this US Women's Open here. Now, the USGA, they've relied on the layout they used for the 2019 US Open for the men to provide quite a lot of guidance in creating the layout for this year's event for the women, so it should be interesting. Par 71 is what it should play down to, from what I've learned. 6,505 yards, but Pebble Beach is always a premium on accuracy, you know, particularly off the tee. Nearly all the fairways have, you know, narrow landing areas. If the wind picks up as well, you know how hard that is, because a lot of them are ocean lined, aren't they? So I think accuracy for me is what you're looking for in a player here. Approach play as well, but I think it's the driving and you're scrambling up and down short game, because if you miss the greens, lots of bunkers, lots of runoff, so you've got to be able to get up and down quite a lot.
Blended, how many selections?
Go for two selections for this one.
Okay, who do you like the most?
The first one, I have to say before I go into it, I probably shouldn't, but I did go for Ronan Yin in the last women's major, the PGA. So there's fingers crossed that.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, well played. Two what in price a row. Was she? We couldn't work out what price she was last week. About 50s?
50-1, yeah.
Oh, well in, mate. Excellent. Right, so you're hot then.
Coming in. I've set myself up for a fall, but the first one here is Megan Kang at 40-1. So a good price that I've looked at. She looks ready for me to add a first major to her collection. She saved her best for the two majors that have already been in this season so far. So she was tied 9th at the Chevron Championship and then tied 3rd at the recent US PGA. So seems to, you know, bring it to the fore when it comes to the really elite prestigious tournaments. Pebble Beach can be tricky, mentioned before, with the winds coming up, but the American is an accurate driver, 11th in driver accuracy, so that can help pave the way, I think, for a successful week. She's also 24th in greens and regulation, so hitting the dance floor regularity, giving herself birdie looks, while her up and down skills as well, I mentioned that, around the green, they should also come into effect on this course. So for me, Kang at 40-1, just that major form that she's shown this season so far looks to be a really good pick.
Nice one. And who's the danger?
Now, tip two, and I apologise, I know we all have different pronunciations of names, but it's Ayaka Furuhei at 30-1. It might get looked at, that pronunciation of it.
No, but I think that's right. I don't think there'll be a furore over your pronunciation of Furuhei. But yeah, no, well, that's Furue. Right then, yeah. Tell us why you like her.
Yeah, really strong form going into this one. Obviously, the last six results have been tied fourth, second, tied fourth, 14th, tied 13th, and tied eighth. So showing really, really strong positive, you know, keeping the momentum going week in, week out. Mentioned driving, ninth in driver accuracy, and then the short game, she's 17th in putting average, eighth in strokes game putting as well. You know, it's for me, for Ahe, if she can get the approach shots, the irons a little bit crisper, a little bit better. I mean, she's shown recent form with them, but just to make sure that she's getting in there with the birdie chances, with the strong putting game that she has, I think that's a good shout as well at 30-1. So yeah, Furuhei is the second and final tip.
Furuhei, lovely stuff, James. That's it. We're done, aren't we? Should we reiterate the tips?
Ooh, yes, why not?
Okay, Live with London.
Live London. Just the one pick here for me, scrolling down my screen is Mito Pereira. I'm going
that's
for
that. That's it. Made in Himalayan. There's a lot going on, mate. Don't worry. Made in Himalayan. Who have we got there?
Made in Himalayan. Three picks for the tournament in Denmark. Adrian Ottergay as the headline one. Oliver Wilson. And then the third one and final is Yannick Paul.
And the John Deere Classic.
John Deere Classic. Two picks for this one. Keith Mitchell and Callum Tarran from Darlington.
And finally, the US Women's Open.
And another two picks for the US Women's Open, the first being Megan Kang and the second being Ayaka Furuhei.
Superb. Well done, James. And what's your strategy there? Do you back all your tips in singles or do you go for a little exotic each way, lucky 15 on the main ones? How will you be playing it?
I tend to do them singles, and then if there's a really big hope, I just have a smidgen of an offering on a little treble or a quadruple this time, obviously, with the four tournaments going on. But yeah, I'm always of the aspect, I think, of small stakes, I think, is the better way to go with decent prices.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Well done, James. Thank you so much for that. You've obviously been working very hard indeed. Good luck with the tips this week. We are back next Tuesday to look at the Barbasol Championship and, more importantly, the Scottish Open. In the meantime, do enjoy the golf. Hopefully get some sunshine. Hopefully the cricket will carry on being good. Loads and loads happening. It's a great summer of sport and the golf month is only going to heat up. We've got the Open coming up soon. So keep it with the Sweet Spot every Tuesday for more great golf betting advice.